Van der Gag who drives it through! Oh, that's a magnificent goal! A sensational goal by the Hullamal captain, Mitchell van der Gag!
We had the high notes on the park, that's how we became a great team together, you know. It's just unfortunate we never won anything.
Man's in trouble, it's Steve Kirk! The super shop has done it again! And Hullamal are back in front!
It's not a choice anymore. You know, we're going to have to be much more effective in the transfer market, and everybody in the club knows that now.
Lukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Lukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Lukovic!
Thick or thin, no matter what happens, we're privileged to be part of this club.
And here they come again, Rangers stretched, it's Ahmed again, Pushwich committing himself, and he scored! It's 3-0 to Hullamal!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Chance here for Hullamal. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the By The Man MFC podcast. Today it's myself and Busta, and we're joined by former Motherwell defender slash midfielder Jim Patterson. Jim, welcome along, mate.
Cheers, thanks for having me.
But as always with the former players, what we'll do is we'll focus mainly on your career at Motherwell, and you obviously arrived after 8 years at Dundee United, where despite making over 100 appearances, you really did suffer some terrible luck in terms of injuries. You moved to Motherwell in 2004 while they were managed by Terry Butcher. Did that come as a real fresh start for you?
No, it did. It did. I had, obviously, as you see, 8 years at Dundee United, and I broke in when I was 18. And by the time when I left, I had only played like 100 starts or something like that. I'd been used mainly as a sort of impact player, a substitute, and it was just you. I'd never had an injury in my career before, and then when I broke into the first team, fractured bone in my back, and then two broken legs back to back, I'd only played something like 16 games in 3 years, so it was tough, but it was like a new challenge, leaving Dundee United, and the main reason for it was, well, I'd worked with Butch before, but obviously I'd played with Morris. And Morris had a big influence in my career, especially at Dundee United. So when he actually said to me about coming, then I jumped at the chance.
And you certainly made a quick impact. You scored your first goal, a 3-0 win in the League Cup against Morton. That kind of started off the League Cup run that season, where we would go all the way to the final. Also, a debut against Celtic. It couldn't really come in a much bigger stage, could it?
No. Like I say, it was a very good start. Like I said, with the game against Celtic, I still remember it. I was baking that day, so it was at Parkhead. And we actually gave good account of ourselves. And it took, I'm pretty sure that was a game where I think McNamara scored for about 25 yards for 1-0, and then they scored late on. So, like I said, Terry had brought in good players, and there was also good players there. And it was one of the things at the start of the season. You just felt as if we could do something. We had enough experience and we had enough youth, and we had a good mix. If you know what I mean. So like there was a good feeling about it. And then getting to the Morton game. Who knew we would have went in that run? And there was twists and turns along the way as well. Like a game against Hearts when we looked as if we'd won it, and then we chucked it away, and then we won it again. And then to be fair, the final was just disappointing. I suppose because we were, I think the occasion get the better is we were a better team than Rangers beating us 5-1.
Yeah, it certainly was a disappointing day. And after having spoken to Richie Foran, he says that there was a feeling amongst the squad that they had to kind of right the wrongs. And I suppose, given the impact they had in the the closing stages of the season, that day when Scott McDonald scored those two goals against Celtic, it certainly showed people how good a side we really were, didn't it?
No, it did. It was like, it was one of them where during that season, we had a good team. We knew we had a good team. Like I say, we go up to the top six, but there was bits and pieces around. It could have been a better season. But sometimes naivety, like, for instance, for me, in the League Cup final, I just thought we'd get caught up on the occasion. Like, we sort of, all the families met, we all met at the Hilton, and the families were there, and everybody was wishing us good luck, and we had a pre-match meal, then we'd done a team talk, then we went there, and like I say, massive occasion, a lot is our first final. We wouldn't have normally done that in another match day, do you know what I mean, kind of thing, so it felt like a big day out. If you know what I mean, like all the fans before the game, and the fans were great, and we were leaving, and you had the feeling that you could do something, but rather than it being like a normal Saturday kind of thing, do you know what I mean, where you're like head on the game, I think too much has got caught on the occasion, and we were basically done before the end of the, and we were chasing our tail. Big Parto got us back in the game at 2-1, but Rangers were still running us a wee bit ragged, and that's normally no the way. It's as if we came out and tried to play Rangers and we lost a goal very early doors, rather than actually if you'd played Rangers at any other time, you would say, let's sit tight and keep it tight. And I felt sorry for Big Marsh that day because he'd been unbelievable all season, and then sort of like he came running out for Morris Ross's first goal, and he took it hard after the game, Big Marsh, but he'd nothing to be sort of like, he gave himself the blame, but he'd nothing to blame himself for, because it's like, we were all in it together. But it was a great experience for the club to get there. It showed that we could get to a final again. And then regarding the run-in, there's a couple of stories. It showed you Leachie, for me, Scott Leach, best captain I've ever worked in, without a shadow of a doubt. And the one each game against Kilmarnock just before we went into the top six. So we'd made the top six. Like I say, I don't know if you remember it. Sure, Addy, Peter Lehman scored a free kick in the first half. Then we equalised through a Stephen Craigan throw, who flung it into the box and everybody went for it, and it hit off Alan Coleman, went in. And that was an equaliser that day, and that cemented that. That was the last day before the split. And we just, our target had to be in the top six. We'd reached a cup final, and it shows you the standards you set, because Terry Butcher came in after the game and went mental. I mean, absolutely. Everybody was celebrating we'd made the top six. He sat us all down and he went through us like a dose of salt. So it was incredible. So then he went in, he had a wee room that he got changed in a hingy, and Leachie sat for 2 seconds, and Leachie said, I'm not having that. And Leachie went in and shut the door. And I know, tell you the explicits, but Leachie threw him like an absolute, the way he'd went through us. And we were sitting there, and then Leachie came back in and said, right, we're going out for a cool down. And we went out and done our cool down, and Terry Butcher, we went back in, he was changed and dressed, sat as all down, and said, just apologised and said, really, the game annoyed him because he didn't want us to scrape into the top six the way we'd played all season. He wanted us to cruise in, do you know what I mean, and show what a good team we were. So you'd understood his frustrations. But then the week before we played Celtic, we went to Ibrox and got gobbled 4-0. And Big Terry again sat us down that day, and this was the standards he set, because everybody goes to Ibrox and the quality players they had. Getting beat 4-0, everybody expected it. Well, no for Big Butch, if you know what I mean, because we weren't going there it'd be like lambs to the slaughter. We were going there to compete. And like I say, we get turned over and he went through us again that day. He'll probably kill me for telling you this. But see the windows away dressing room, it's obviously on the main street, and all the fans, the Rangers fans, heard us shout, him shouting at us. They started shouting through the window, on your cell, big man, day's a favour next week, because we were playing Celtic. He got up on the bench and started shouting back out the window, day's a favour, day yourselves a favour. Do you know what I mean? And we were all sitting there saying, well, he started shouting at them now, so should we actually get ready and go, or what's happening here? And he gave them pelters for about 5 minutes. But then the following week, I suppose the following week was great, because you don't want to see a team coming and winning the league on your sort of home patch, do you know what I mean? And another thing was, you need to be respectful to all the other teams in the league. So even though it's the last game and it's between Celtic and Rangers, you still need to turn up and be professional, and I think that's what we've done. But I don't know if you've got it, but if you look back at the team we had out that day, then we were out in sight that day by miles. Because like I say, I'm sure I had to play left back because I think Wee Hamel was injured, and then you'd Willie Kinnebrew had hardly played all season, Stephen Craig and Martin Corrigan was playing, but what you didn't know is the Kaiser actually had a fractured kneecap. So he was playing with Brian Kerr had come back in, he'd only played a couple of games. Sean Fagan hadn't played a lot, played in the middle of the park. And like I say, you had Scotty and Jim Hamilton up front. So it was like, it wasn't as if like we didn't have Phil, we didn't have Leachie, do you know what I mean? We didn't have a lot of players that was playing at the time, if you know what I mean. We had like a sort of makeshift out, but Celtic just, it was one of the weird games where after 75 minutes, I remember looking up at the clock, it was 1-0. And I was actually thinking to myself, to be honest, I was like, right, 15 minutes and I'm on my holidays, do you know what I mean, kind of thing. And it was one of them where everybody expected Celtic to turn up and geez a doing, and we had played really well and we were still in the game. And then, like I say, the longer the game went on, it went awfully quiet because I think Rangers had scored, and I think the Celtics fans started to feel the atmosphere like, by the way, a goal could change this game. And then I think that rubbed off on the players. And then obviously when we Scotty spun and put it in the top corner, I looked up at the clock, it read 88 minutes, and you were actually saying, wow. But you knew they were going to commit us, and then obviously they had everybody in our half when we cleared it. Scotty went up the other end and scored, do you know what I mean? So, like I say, if I'm bearing on that sort of game and he played in that game, then it was a great experience. Don't get me wrong, but half my family didn't talk to me for about 3 months after it, if you know what I mean. But
Terry, second season was a difficult one, wasn't it? And kind of succumbed to injuries. And
well, I did. What happened in the second season was this, believe it or not, right? Obviously, see with my injuries, right, and I'd always carried, I've got one of the frames where I'd gain weight very easily, but I can also lose weight. So my injuries when I came, not playing that amount of football and so many, I had gained, obviously, weight, right, because everybody... I'm sure Tam Kim still gives me pelters about the size of my arse. I'm sure somebody actually says he was at like a speaker's night one night and it got brought up. So, like I said, excuse my language there, my bum. You can edit that out and say...
it's quite all right, we've had worse.
I get pelters about my bum, right? So, I went away after that season. It'd been a good season. I'd played quite a lot. I went away that season and I'd done a lot of road running to get myself fitter, because pre-season before I had an okay pre-season, but I came back for the pre-season, the second season, and I was flying. I was actually up there at the front and had worked really hard on my fitness to get up there. But then a couple of months into the season, I started to develop a pain. It was a pain in my pelvis, and I just couldn't shake it. Like, I wasn't able to perform, I wasn't moving correctly. It was just, I was in agony all the time, but I didn't want to stop playing. And then it happened that I had to come off one day at Ibrox, and wee John Portis, who was great, thought I had a hernia. So, but then there was other symptoms. He's like, but you've not got the symptoms of a hernia. So he arranged, he took me down to Leeds when they inject ink into you. When they injected the ink into me, my pelvis pure lit up like a light bulb. And the specialist was like, it's an overuse injury. So all the runs I had sort of been doing during the summer to get myself fitter had actually worked against me, because he said if I didn't stop playing, I was going to actually crack my pubic bone. Because like, I would just get up in the morning and be in absolute agony. I could hardly get out of bed. And then he told me just to rest. So that all I could do really was the bike and core exercises. And I'd done that for about 3-4 months. And I woke up one morning and the pain was actually away. And then that meant I could come back in towards the end of the season. So it was frustrating because it wasn't like a normal injury where you could get treated for. It was just an injury where I just basically had to just come in every day and just go on the bike and day core, and then in the afternoons I was on the bike day core, and everybody else was out playing football and I was just in agony. But there was like no quick fix, there was nothing anybody could sort of day to help me, or there was no like an operation I could get, or there was no like an injection I could get. It was just one of the things where I had to just sit and wait until it was healed. So the second season was so frustrating.
It seemed like a bit of a non-event that season as well. You kind of felt that after the way it started with the 4-H game against Celtic, it kind of did die a bit of a death. It felt like Terry was coming to his end of his tenure at the club. There's a few players ready to move on. It was a wee bit of a transition phase, and after narrowly missing out in the top six, it kind of just faded away into nothing.
The last five games, because I've come back towards the end of the season, the last five games, even though I didn't want the season to end, do you know what I mean? The last five games was a bit of a damn squid, because I think that was when I scored the best goal of my career in the last five games. I think it was against Dunfermline. I had a right fit volley for about 25 yards. So the season was coming to an end and I wasn't wanting that. I was wanting to play on. But you're right in what you said. I think sometimes Terry came in, obviously, in with the admin, and we'd punched above our weight and punched above our weight and punched above our weight. And then suddenly we get sort of seen as like mid-table, a hard team to sort of go to. Like, people respected us, but that worked against us as well, because normally when people, you're like, you played Motherwell this week, they went the opposite because they knew it would be a really difficult game, and people were starting to do their homework in us rather than us doing our homework in them, kind of thing, which is, supposed them giving us the respect for what we achieved. But before each game that you talk about was an incredible, because everybody spoke about it. The first game back after Celtic had lost the league was us, and they're back at Fir Park again, and they had been beat off the Bratislava team 5-0, and then they came to us. Sure, they were 3-1 up at half time, and we turned it around and went to 4-3, and it was like, we've done it to them again, sort of thing. And then beat equalised late on, scrambled the ball over the line for 4 each. But I think that set our stall out, and I think everybody then decided to set their stall out against us. But It was a tough season, because it was like you say, we had some highs the season before, kind of thing, that you expect to take home, but it did just sort of peter out towards the end of the season. And again, like you say, it was sort of coming to the end, like Big Butch was maybe going to move on, do you know what I mean? I think we knew that as players, and again, you had players that had done well over a couple of seasons that people were starting to have a sniff at, do you know what I mean? Like Hamo and Scotty and stuff like that, so you knew we were going to lose a few players.
Terry, obviously, apart, and Morris was promoted to manager, a man that you've got a lot of respect for still. It didn't work out at Fir Park, but I suppose for you personally, you were able to reaffirm yourself as a mainstay in the first team.
No, that was it, that season under Morris. I think that season I actually played everywhere. It's funny because, you know, sometimes in football, like at Motherwell, in terms of fans, it's like you can't please everybody. So I think I'm, as a player, if I'm being honest, it maybe split at half, really liked me, and half thought they could be better out there, that they could get into the team. But I think the season under Morris, I played nearly every position apart from a goalkeeper. Like, I played right back, played centre-back, I played right centre-back, I played left midfield, played centre-midfield, I played left back. So I sort of played everywhere under Morris and always gave 100%. And I think that started to rub off with some of the fans, because I remember coming out the final day after the, I'm sure it was the St Mirren game, and we were 2-0 up, and then obviously Dunfermline had been beat with Inverness and we stayed up, and there's a lot of fans. But when I come out, I get praise. I wasn't expecting it, do you know what I mean? But a lot. So I don't know if I'd won a lot of fans there just for the fact that I was willing to basically play anywhere for the club, give 100%, and just no chuck in the towel, do you know what I mean? But in terms of Morris's tenor, it was a difficult one for Mo, because obviously Big Terry's get big shoes to fill. And like, me and you had a conversation the other day on the phone where Morris seen in Ross McCormick an unbelievable player when Scott McDonald left. And he signed Ross McCormick to be like a sort of main man that's got to score goals. And you need to score goals to win games. It's that simple. And then obviously Ross had an illness, and Ross never played the full season. So the guy you bring in to replace Scotty, because Scotty was, like, again, a difficult player to replace, Morris never got the best of him. Whereas the following season, Mark McGee, Ross was back to 100%. Mark McGee seen the benefits and how good a player Ross McCormick it was. So I felt sorry for more like that. And other things, like I said to you before, we had trialists come out and playing trialist games, and they looked unbelievable. And we signed them, and then when it came to the crunch, they weren't good enough under Mo. But at the same time, that was an up and down season as well. Hibs scudded us 5-1, we beat Kilmarnock 5-1, we went to Ibrox and got a draw, and it was the first time we had got a point at Ibrox in years, do you know what I mean? So it was like an up and down season, and a difficult one for Mo, because you're the sort of thing, the assistant manager goes for laughing and joking with all the boys kind of thing into the managerial role. And when Mo was having a go at some players, you could see some players like, no, take them serious, that would be wrong because we were all professionals, but like, didn't carry as much weight if he'd just come in and been a fresh manager, do you know what I mean? Like the,
yeah,
because he'd had that sort of relationship with them before, but that was definitely it was a disappointing season, especially the fact that the season before, we had finished sort of in the bottom six compared to the season before that, do you know what I mean? And he finished like in that place in the, finished like second bottom in the table with the actual quality we had in the team. But it was a transitional period as well because we had lost players, and then like I say, our main goal threat had been out for the full season.
Jim, just to ask you as well, you mentioned obviously, you know, you played all over the park. Basically, where did you feel your best position was?
Well, to be honest, left back. I get comfortable in left back. I like left back because you could always go on the ball at left back. Sometimes when I felt I played wide left, you wouldn't get as much of the ball. And sometimes it wasn't due to the fact of what you were doing, if you know what I mean. Like in terms of a play and etc., you'd be moving for it, and it might go forward to the strikers, and then you'd maybe get a touch. You'd do a lot of running. Where I felt I was always comfortable in the ball, so see it left back where I could take it and actually start things, and then once the play was settled, you could actually move forward and actually get involved with the forward play as well. I like that. Always centre mid was actually a position that everybody says I should have played, but like I say, cause like you're left-footed, everybody like that, or you don't know that you don't find many left-footed players, you do, but you always want balance to your team, so I would always be shunted out in the left, either wide left midfielder or left back. But when I was younger, I used to have a lot of pace, believe it or not, and like, people kind of believe that now, but I did when I was a winger. But when I come back for the injuries, I didn't lose a yard, I lost about three, do you know what I mean? So wide left became more about me using my head and playing 1-2s and sort of getting in areas rather than just getting the ball down and just tearing by people and crossing it on the box. But I enjoyed left back because I always felt involved at left back. If you're only defending, you were on the ball or you'd be helping out in attacks. And it's easy to talk and organise people around about you for there as well, because like I say, when young Reynolds broke into the team, and me on one side, I mean Craig in the other, and like I just, you can ask him, I think his ear was numb by the time 90 minutes came, because I would just constantly be in his ear for the full 90 minutes.
The game that I can remember you, and a part that stands out for you as well, is the game at Kilmarnock that season where you scored and were also sent off. I still to this day don't know what that was for. You seem to delay taking a throw-in.
It's the only red card in my career, right? I don't mind a tackle, I've always been fair, I've never tried to hurt anybody, but it's the only red card in my career, and I get sent off because of a throw-in, do you know what I mean? It's one of them when you look back, you actually laugh at it. The referee actually apologised to me after the game, because I seen him a couple of weeks later at another game, and he apologised to me then, and I'd been booked in the first half for a tackle on Danny Invincible, and then Graham, we were 2-1 up, and Graham Smith was doing a lot of time wasting, if you understand what I mean, a lot of time wasting.
Yeah.
And I had the ball in my hands to take a throw in, and obviously Kilmarnock fans, and Big Richie took a knock, so Richie actually stood up as if he was going to continue, and I went to take a throw, and then he went back down, and then he stood up again, and I went to take a throw, and then he went back down, and I looked at Richie, and I said to him, I went, are you alright? Are you not alright? And he's like, give me a minute. So then I put the ball in my hands and I just went to take the throw in, and the referee, he didn't whistle, he didn't tell me to hurry up, he just came running straight out, dished out the yellow card and booked me. But I was standing there with the ball in my hands, and I'd actually said to him, I says, you kidding me on? And he looked at me and then he went like, have I booked you? And I went, aye. And then he whipped out the red card, do you know what I mean? But the look of the ref's face when he actually pulled out a red card was a picture. But like I said, you reacted to the fans because you had the time wasting. But then I was like up the tunnel and I'm like, ah, sent off for taking my time out of throwing, do you know what I mean? Which was one of the things. But like I say, it was Buzzy's fault. He was taking half an hour for every goal kick, do you know what I mean?
I was quite good at that, wasn't
it? I was brilliant at that, especially when we were winning. We didn't mind it, do you know what I mean? But when you get sent off for cause of him, do you know what I mean? It's a different ball game. But aye, that was mixed emotions that game, but because I'd scored, although I say I scored, it took about 4 deflections before it went by the keeper. I think I was in my right foot as well. But that was one of the games when you're sitting in the dressing room after a game, you've won the game, but you've scored, which turned out to be the winner, and then you've been sent off at the same time. You're sort of sitting there with mixed emotions. But it was a strange one.
We touched upon the fact that it just didn't work out for Morris for a variety of reasons, I suppose, that Motherwell and Mark McGee came in to replace him after his one and only season in charge. The team returned for pre-season and seemed to have picked up a great deal of fitness, intensity of the play, and I think that all kind of came together for the goal on the opening day of the season against St Mirren. It was a brilliant team goal, still one of my favourites to actually look back on. What difference did that pre-season make to the team? I know there was a few very good quality players added as well, but it was a fantastic change. It was very much for the better.
Well, I've worked with Mark McGee a few times, right, and I can honestly say that he is cleverest manager I've ever worked under. I loved working under Mark. I couldn't praise him highly enough. It was a different class. He came in that pre-season and we had all come back fit, I think, for the year before with the disappointment. Because of the players that we were, if you understand what I mean, then we were disappointed where we finished, we were disappointed where the season we had had, and we all come back for pre-season in incredible shape. But don't get me wrong, his pre-season was still extremely difficult, but we had the balls out for day one. And we would just constantly work on passing, but he would put things in our head, like the passing drills. He would time us with passing drills and do it one way, and then work on another thing and time it and say, look, you do it quicker that way, taking one, two touch, then you do it passing it, turning, passing it, and he would prove it to us. He was constantly had wee rules in the game that every time you touch the ball, you had to sprint 5 yards to force us to play and move and play and move. And don't get me wrong, he brought in some quality players I know that helped the squad, but it was just like that, we would normally I've worked with managers and you're playing a team and you work on the defensive aspect of the game in terms of how the other team sets up and where your shape should be. We never worked on that. All we would work about is he would look at the team and he would look at their weaknesses and he says, right, this is how we would win. Like, we played Gretna and he had me and Paul Quinn because they had Big Chris Innes playing as a middle one against Chris Porter. And we worked all week on Chris Porter pulling away for the centre-backs. And me and Paul had to whip across in. We'd just to hang it up at the back post for Chris to head down, for Clarke and Ross McCormick to get in about Chris Innes' feet to try and get shots away. And we scored 2 goals there. So we worked on that the full week. So he would do things like that. We played Celtic at Parkhead and he put us on the 4 corners of the pitch at training and we were playing triangles. Out of defence, like 3v2s, and he got us to work in that a week because he kept saying, "Is if we go to Parkhead and every time we win the ball back, we just lump it." He says, "Then they're just got to keep coming at us, so we're going to have to take the ball in these sort of areas and play our way out. Otherwise, we're just got to get the ball back to the Celtic." So we worked on things that would benefit us for the game in the Saturday. We worked on them all week, and that's what I mean when I say he was. So intelligent in terms of the sort of who we played and how we would play and we would change formations. And let me tell you, see that goal against St Mirren, that wasn't a fluke. We worked in that. Mark McGee had a drill that was 11 seconds for a corner. It was a counter-attack where we would line the team up of how we would mark the box. And we had McGarry at the edge of the box and Clark at the edge of the box. And the rule always was, as soon as Buzz claimed one, we would just break like the Red Arrows. Steve McGarry would go one way, David Clarkson would go the other way, and everybody just burst out the box and would help the attack. It would do it with one team at one end of the park, hitting a corner, and the other team at the other end of the park, hitting a corner. he would have his stopwatch, the corner would be taken, he'd start his stopwatch, and you had 11 seconds to play through the other team. Do you know what I mean? One team would break from one box, the other team would break from the other box. So for it to work the very first game of the season was incredible, and it was great. It was a sort of thing for us to say, by the way, this guy knows what he's doing, do you know what I mean? Like, coaching is mentally as well, like when he coached us about us being a good team and how we wanted to play, and not just that. Like, I remember the Kilmarnock game. After the Kilmarnock game, I remember the old Dick Turpin, at least Dick Turpin wore a mask issue. We looked at the sort of stats after the game, and Kilmarnock had two shots and goals, and then we brought up how many shots and crosses and everything we had, and you just put it down at one in 8 days sometimes when the ball doesn't get in the net for you. And he would show us all this to say, look what we're doing. We lost the game, but what we're doing is right, and we just keep doing it. We went to Hibs in the cup, and Hibs were known for a passing team, and we absolutely just, and that was our first test, because we had an easy start to the start of the season, and we were doing well, and then we got Hibs in the cup, and everybody looked at it as if they say, oh, we'll find out how good Motherwell really will be. And we went to Hibs and beat them 4-2 and absolutely destroyed them at Easter Road, and I think everybody started to realise, like, the real deal. The game against Rangers at Fir Park when Chris Porter scored, and then Rangers get their usual dubious penalty, do you know what I mean, to make it one each when Beasley get brought down. We were showing that we were a match for anybody.
Yeah, there was many memorable performances, and without bringing back too many bad memories, I suppose they all came about with Phil O'Donnell being the heartbeat of the team. Particularly remember the performance against Aberdeen the first half at Fir Park around December time, even the first half of the match against Dundee United, where it was instrumental. The team just clicked. It was particularly that Aberdeen game. I think that's one of the best Motherwell performances I've ever seen.
The 3-0 game, the 3-0
phenomenal.
That was at the point we actually started to believe, if you understand what I mean, that we were that good a team. And it was one of them, see when we get our noses in front, and that's what I'm saying again about it, Mark. When we get our noses in front, it was just like, we don't score a goal and sit, we go for the jugular, we go and punish teams away, Rangers and Celtic. Sort of, that was our sort of attitude, that we weren't happy sitting in a 1-0, it was like, and we were on top of the game, we were flying. In terms of Phil, like, it was a tough time. Phil was my best mate at Motherwell, do you know what I mean? It was the one of them, I was in between Paul Quinn and David Clarkson, that, and they were all a wee bit younger. Me and Big David Partridge were quite close, and then Parto, we played at Dundee United, and we stayed in Diggs together, and then Parto left. And then sort of, it was Leachy and Phil were a wee bit older, but like, me and Phil were really close. We'd travel to games together whenever we were away, sort of like Christmas night out, etc. We would share Dean room together, do you know what I mean? And my wife at the time was really good friends with Eileen. And for me, even talking about Phil now, it's difficult because I still remember that game, and can I believe it? It's one of the things. He was so fit. He was just such an incredible guy on the pitch and off the pitch. In terms of, he was a quiet guy. He learned to shout it and bawled it as and gave his stick. Phil just led by example, and you could see why he was the player that he was, but away for the park as well, he was grounded. He'd done loads in his career, but he wasn't the one of them that you would know, if you know what I mean. Or didn't he name drop, he didn't do anything like that. He was just an incredible guy. And like I say, that performance against Dundee United was our best performance, like, up until that. And then I think everybody realised something serious, because the place went was quiet. So quiet, you could actually hear the ball getting kicked like the last 15 minutes, because there was nothing for the crowd, there was no atmosphere in the game. Like, don't get me wrong, it was still, when the medical team came on and Phil went up, it was still a surprise, and I was one of the first up the hospital, and when they told me, I just collapsed in a heap. It was it's a difficult thing to talk about, and I remember, because my move came right after that, I remember speaking to Eileen about it, and I spoke to Eileen, because the chance for me to go to Plymouth came up, and it was a great opportunity for me to play in the Championship, but I didn't actually want to leave. I felt I shouldn't leave, if you understand what I mean, because of everything that had sort of happened, then it was Eileen that sort of said to me, you can't miss out on this opportunity, do you know what I mean? You need to go. So it was a horrendous time, do you know what I mean, for the club, especially the way the sort of season had sort of went. And he was enjoying his football, he was loving it, do you know what I mean, kind of thing. And it's one of the things you speak about, and you see other things in the TV, then it just brings back, like, I think it was a boy for Bolton, was it Bolton that it was at?
Yeah, Mwamba.
You see things like that on the TV, and it just brings everything flooding back to you. So I don't think I'll ever sort of go over it. So I think he sort of got over it, especially you just don't think it, do you know what I mean? Like, and especially a guy like Phil, like I say, was taken away from his far, far too young.
You talked about kind of the time you left for Plymouth. That was in the back of the, I think your final game was the cup replay against Hearts.
It was.
It must have meant quite a lot, though, to be part of the 2-2 game at Tynecastle, where the fans and the players were able to pay tribute to Phil, and he seemed to certainly be with us from 2-0 down to battle back. It was a very special day, wasn't it?
No, it was, because I remember that day, because I thought I'd blown it. I was actually, like, I wouldn't say I was nearly in tears, but normally in a game as a defender you lose a sort of goal, but it was such a big game for us, and it was the first game back. I can't remember how we lost the first goal, but the second goal, me and Mark Reynolds got caught out of position, and it was in between me and Stephen Craigan, and I thought he was coming over and he didn't come out, and I sort of ran out of cover and got nutmegged, and then I can't remember the striker's name, but he went round, big buzz and scored to make it 2-0, and I remember saying to myself, I've just cost us, do you know what I mean? So there wasn't a happier guy in the place when we actually got it back to 2-2, but I think you're right, I think we were playing well and at the time, and we were a wee bit, it was weird being out on the pitch so quickly after it, do you know what I mean? And we were all still a wee bit numb from what had happened, but we needed to continue the season, do you know what I mean? So it was one of them to come back, and then the atmosphere against the Hearts, it was just one of them. Seeing that game before we played Hearts, there was, if anybody had walked into that dressing room, into the two dressing rooms, you would have walked out and said, Motherwell got to win tonight, because it was just that, even in the dressing room before the game, it was scary, because normally we were alive a bunch before the game, but see, when everybody was in the dressing room that night before the game, we were extremely quiet, and it wasn't a quietness as if, like, we were nervous or scared, it was like that quietness, like, we're getting into battle here and we're going to win this. It was just everybody was so focused on what they had today, and we knew that, and to be fair, that night, we should have beat Hearts by more, but it was just, it was good for the fact that we came for 2-0 down back to 2-2, and then finally won the game 1-0. It felt as if, do you know what I mean? Because it was the first sort of game after Phil. It felt as if we'd done it for him, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, move on to your career after Motherwell. The move to Plymouth, you were there for 2.5 years. How did you find the transition to English football? I know down south there's a kind of low perception of Scottish the game. How did you find the transition?
Well, it was funny, because I remember saying to John Blackley, and John Blackley started to laugh at me. I went down to Plymouth in my first 5 games. We won 4 and drew 1. And I was like, and we went from 7th to 4th, and I was like, I thought this league was meant to be hard. And he started laughing. He says, son, he says, get another couple of games, because it is a hard league to play in, but I just loved it. But when I went down to Plymouth, I'd obviously worked with Paul Sturrock when I was younger, and he played me left midfield. Do you know what I mean? And it was even harder down there, because you've got fullbacks and that were absolutely, like, rapid. Do you know what I mean? But we were a hard-working team, Plymouth, and we done really well. It was one of the times we were in good form, really good form, and we sat 4th, 5th, or 6th for the majority of the season. Towards the end of that season, looked as if we were going to make a playoffs for the Premiership. And then we hit a blip. You know how every team has a blip? We hit a blip in April and sort of fell down to 10th. And then we just couldn't recover the points to actually, we finished 10th to actually make a mount for the playoffs. But no, I enjoyed English football. It was so much different from Scottish football in the dressing room. and on the pitch, so to speak, because at Motherwell, I had went for being a very, very, very close-knit team. We were a very close-knit team, and you sort of got into England, and everybody sort of looked out for themselves, sort of thing, who was getting a move for where, kind of thing, do you know what I mean? Who was playing, who wasn't playing, who was taking a place, who wasn't taking a... that kind of thing. But I did enjoy it. Down there it was beautiful part of the country in England, Devon, and I did enjoy my time down there. I didn't play as much as I'd wanted, just for the fact that me and Paul Sturrock had a few run-ins, and now I'm normally not that type of character, but like I say, when I signed down there I was 28, and but Paul had me since I was he gave me my debut when I was 18, so at times I felt, you know that way, sometimes you feel as if you get treated like a kid, so to speak. So, like, we had run-ins now and again, but I still enjoyed my time working under Paul and playing for Plymouth. So it was a great experience to play in the Championship. The quality down there is of a very high standard, but again, it's no miles, if you know what I mean, and I'm sure anybody that goes down there will tell you, it's no miles away from the standard in Scotland.
Did it come as a wee bit of a wrench to see the club go on to finish third and perhaps, well, it did deny you the chance to play in Europe the following season?
Massive. I remember looking, I watched all the games and I was wishing them all the best. I'd text all the boys to wish them all the best. It was one of the things, when you see it, when you leave it and the team's absolutely flying and you're leaving a really, really, really good team. And then, like, I was delighted that season that they kicked on and they got third spot and got into Europe. And again, like you say, when you're sitting watching them, you're like, I could still be there, do you know what I mean? Playing in Europe. Because it was something that I'd always wanted to do, and I didn't do it till a wee bit later on in my career. But it was just great to see the club doing well, do you know what I mean? I still got a lot of friends at Motherwell. And it was like to say, it was just great to see them finish third because they deserved it that season.
You touched on it there, your career's taken to a loan spell at Aberdeen and then Shamrock Rovers, where you got to play against the likes of Spurs in the Europa League, and then just spell at Bristol, Forfar, and then on to Dunfermline last season. What does the future hold for you in football? Where do you see your future in football now?
Well, I don't know. I'd done my coaching badge since I was 30. I've had my license since I was 30 because I'm desperate to get into coaching. And then what happened was I was playing in England and there was a few other clubs that were interested in me in England to stay in England. But me and my wife split up. The kids come up the road sort of thing just after Plymouth. And the playing in England, I was travelling up to Bristol twice a month. And personally, I wasn't seeing my kids enough. So it was one of them when I says, right, I had a few offers in England and I said, you need to make a choice. And I was like, I'm not considering the money sort of thing. So I decided to come back up the road. So you knew, like, no sort of coming back to Scotland at my age to get paid fortunes kind of thing. And then when Dick came in to go to Forfar, it was brilliant. I loved the first half of the season last year when I went to Forfar. It was incredible. I changed it, believe it or not, because a lot of people laugh at this. When I hit 26, when Mark McGee came in, I decided to give myself a shake because I'm like, right, and really, really see how far I could push myself physically to get my fitness levels up. And I've always maintained a high standard of that. So then I became a personal trainer. So, like I say, I'm now training people to get fit. And the thing is, I know exactly what I'm doing because I've done it for so many years myself. But the forefather with the part-time was great. And then obviously signed for Dunfermline and it was full-time. But with the full-time thing, I found that really difficult in terms of being out in the gym in the morning, then through full-time at Dunfermline, then being full-time at night in the gym. So for me this season, I'm still obviously got to continue the personal training, but I'm looking for a part-time club because I'm still fit enough and able enough to play. But I don't want like any sort of clubs in the lower leagues that are full time because that just wouldn't suit me. Because I've now moved into that point where I'm playing for enjoyment. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like, you know, I'm looking for a club at the minute. Do you know what I mean? A few people are interested, but you're not watching teams speaking to boys that started playing their pre-season games and all that, and I'm sat my Saturday, do you know what I mean, just sort of twiddling my thumbs, and I'm just desperate to get back in the pitch, but also looking to get into coaching. Like I said, I've done a bit of coaching at every club, like at Bristol Rovers. I took Dunfermline under-20s last season with Andy Barrowman, so I'm looking to take the next step and my next sort of step into coaching as well. But I spoke to a few people over the summer, because when the season finished at the end of last season and I was quite tired for the amount of work that I was actually doing, I thought about maybe hanging up the boots. But then everybody that's obviously all the ex-players you speak to that have actually hung up their boots, a lot to me, don't dare. A lot of just, you keep playing as long as you can, because the minute you say that's it, that's it. And the lot, especially the fact that you're fit enough to play in the lot, you will regret it. So I've took that advice on board, just sort of recharged the batteries, and now I'm ready to go this season. But I definitely see I'm not in personal training now, but I definitely see my future in football. And having the personal training has actually added like an extra string to my bow, just for the fact that I don't think we train properly in terms of strength and conditioning in the footballing, in the sort of footballing world. For what I've done in the past to what we're doing now, I know it's sports science and stuff like that, but I just don't think we do. And I'd love to actually get like in at a club somewhere, do you know what I mean, see if what I'm thinking, do you know what I mean, would benefit the players.
Yeah, I'd like to finish by just thanking you for your time. It's been very interesting, as it always is when we have former players on, particularly the stories about Terry Butcher. I must say, there's a few that we hadn't heard there, and just if your phone goes, I would ignore it.
No, I know, like I say, the big man, I'd worked with him. I'd worked with him at Dundee United, and he took the youth team. So my first 3 months was so difficult with Motherwell, because I kept calling him Butch, because I'd called him that for like 3 years, or 2 years, do you know what I mean? And every time I said it, he went, "Patty, it's Gaffer." I'm like, "Sorry, Gaffer." I'm like, "I will get that right at one time." Do you know what I mean? But no, the big man was, because I used to travel with Mo, and honestly, there was a couple of times after games, like whether we'd won or whether we'd get beat, Mo would always stop off for a glass of wine, and like I would need to go in as well. And if you're like, I'm just so happy that seeing the two occasions that it happened, Dad actually had a good game, because I wouldn't like to have seen me if he'd said to me if I had a shocker and I needed to have went back with Mo to Mo with a glass of wine. So, no, but it was a great time at Motherwell, I really did. And I always wish, I'm always looking at, like you say, for the Motherwell results and that. Like I say, last season was a tough season, but I'm sure they'll bounce back. There's a lot of quality in that squad, and I see you've recently signed Clarkie back. Clarkie comes into my gym. Do you know what I mean? That's the gym he's been using. So, like I say, it's good to see the wee man. It's good to see him back there, because I think he'll thrive on it again, because he was successful the first time he was there, and I'm pretty sure, like I say, his form for Dundee last season was good as well. And I played him at Bristol Rovers, and the wee man's still got a lot in the tank to offer.
I said it before, we spoke before the playoff, you were quite confident, which I didn't really share your confidence at the time, I must confess, but what changed it for you, given how poor Motherwell's record was at Ibrox going into that game? Why did you feel they had an edge?
I just felt they had an edge because, like I said, they had a lot of injuries last season, didn't they? Like, in terms of we hammer on that, didn't play much. But I never, ever seen, like, I know Motherwell were doing there and they were struggling, they actually picked up a bit of form towards the end of the season, but the problem is, like, Ross County picked up a bit of form as well. But for me, the quality was always there in getting the players back, you know what I mean? And that's what I said when you looked at a Rangers situation. You had a team that were second bottom of the league, but they weren't a bottom of the league team. Do you know what I mean? The quality they had there. And I just felt, it's one of the things as well, when people talk things up about them never winning. See, even things like that get brought to players' attention, then it's like somebody coming out and saying something about your team before the game, you pin it in the board. Do you know what I mean? And it fuels your fire. And the fact that everybody was saying, oh, Rangers this and Rangers that, and Motherwell have never, and Motherwell haven't been in good form, but yet Motherwell were getting players back, then I just knew that it wasn't going to work out the way that everybody had had thought, and then obviously going back to Fir Park, because everybody need to realise this, Fir Park's one of the hardest places you go to play. I know you've maybe not seen that the way last season went, but you ask any player, the toughest places to go, and I remember before I signed for Motherwell, I would hate going to Fir Park. It was always a difficult game against Motherwell. So for me, it was just a case of Motherwell staying in the game at Ibrox, actually staying in the tie, and then going back to Fir Park, I never had any doubt. But they basically finished the job off, and if you're 3-1 doing it first leg at home and then you need to go to Fir Park, then really you've not really got a chance, to be honest. But I'm glad they did stay up, because like I say, I'm sure they'll build for next season. Like I say, the Clarkey signing and that is brilliant. And I'm sure they'll kick on again. But sometimes you're a victim of your own success, and that's, I think, what happened to Motherwell last year, because they've been up there competing every other season. Do you know what I mean? Up at the top of the league, and then you sometimes get a season when it just, things don't go your way. But at least it didn't completely, like, have a nightmare season and get relegated. So I'm pretty sure that Motherwell will kick on next season.
Jim, thanks again, mate. Buster, thanks very much. I know you've got a bit of a hangover, so you've been very chatty today.
No, as I say, thanks very much for coming on, Jim. And,
not a problem, guys.
This is By the Minute MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
Money talks, but it don't sing and dance, and it don't walk. Long as I can have you here with me, I'd much rather be forever in blue jeans. Honey's sweet, but it ain't nothing next to baby's treat. And if you pardon me, I'd like to say we do okay forever in blue jeans. Baby, tonight by the fire, all alone, you and I. Nothing around but the sound of my heart and your sighs. Money talks, but it can't sing and dance, and it can't. Nothing around.